Hello, everyone. Thank you, Kieran. I'll just try and get this microphone right. Is that about right? Yeah? Is that good? It's such a pleasure to be back here. I was here, been twice before, once in 2008, 17 years ago, when we were all different people. And I just want to pay tribute to Paul for being the driving force of this wonderful gathering every month, and to keep it going for so long and with such vigor and energy, and providing such a wonderful outlet for the poets of Cork is quite something. So I just wanted to say that. Pleasure also to be reading with Emily. I bumped into Emily. Is she still online?
She is.
She is. Oh. Good, I better be polite then. which is no effort whatsoever. Emily was a wonderful person to meet at the Egg Show many times, and it was always a joyful experience. I thought her poems extremely moving, and congratulations, Emily, on the expected arrival. I'm going to be reading probably four poems. I actually have to pick up my partner from the airport at about 11 o'clock, I think. So if I dash off, it's not because of anything but that. Yeah, thank you. This is a strange book. It came out of COVID, but like I think Emily mentioned COVID. I had these very strange dreams, and one of them, I woke up with a line on my in my head, which was, "Poets do not come here anymore." And I couldn't think what it was referring to, and but it felt very significant. And a few weeks later, I had another dream, a flying dream, which I have occasionally, and I ended up on the top of Notre Dame Cathedral. And I saw this this gargoyle who turned round and said, "Poets do not come here anymore." And it was the start of a series of dreams and meditations in which this book unfolded. So it's kind of a story. There's a bit of a whodunit aspect to it. The poet in the book is obsessed with finding out who or what started the fire of Notre Dame in 2019. And the gargoyle thinks that the poet can help him or it escape its stony shell through works of imagination. So they have a sort of strange companionship. So I'll go just give you a taster. It's a difficult book to take extracts from, and I also have to do a sort of voice of a gargoyle, and I can't act. So. I'll just sort of go down a notch and sound slightly more growly, I hope. So this is a poem called Burnings. Has two parts. The second one is a sonnet. And gargoyle tells poet about the true story of a French satirical poet called Claude Le Petit, who lived in the 17th century. Who was a scandalous poet, blasphemer. And Claude Le Petit's friend, Jacques Chaussin, was openly gay at a time when it was very dangerous to be so. And the second part is actually a translation of a sonnet by Claude Le Petit about his friend. But it makes you very grateful to live in the 21st century. So this is called Burnings. Evenings were stretching Lent, when once again I had the dream and rose above the college to the firmament. And looking down, I saw an earthly cosmos, the galaxy of Paris, its planets rising up as glowing domes. I landed on the roof, and there he was, watching the canal calm river flow. He creaked around, grin bulbous. I waved, shouting. I was dying to know how fire broke out in Notre Dame. I heard it was an accident, I said, a cigarette or some electrical fault. He looked at me and slowly blinked, as if he thought I was completely mad. "Accident, my poet friend? Does fire begin by accident? Does sea begin by accident? Does wind begin by accident? There might be nothing you call God in this world, but I have learned there's a malevolence in this universe who likes to change our lives at whim." He cackled to himself as memory stirred. "I lived under Louis Le Soleil. I was a beggar then and saw the plight of Claude Le Petit, poet, scorner, prince of outcasts. I heard the gossip, how he left his window wide and wind wafted papers off his bureau, blowing them outside. Ah, see them floating to the ground at the feet of a passing priest. The priest picks up a leaf and reads satanic script, dismissing the Blessed Mary's maidenness." His smirking, dimple deep, now disappeared. "The scoundrel is put on trial. The jury's not too long in spitting out its venom. First, they hack his hand off. Pour encourager les poètes to behave themselves. And though his stump can't write, they strangle him in case his tongue might twitch. Then burn him in the Place de Grève, the killing place for heretics, blasphemers." He paused and raised his head to sniff the air, as if to savor the memory of smoke. "Did the wind begin by accident? May not. Malevolence birthed it. But Claude Le Petit knew the risks. The year before, his fellow farceur, Jacques Chausson, was liking males too much. He also burned. And not by accident. And little the grief for him, the singed scent of sod's flesh is the same as the martyrs. Chausson, from the French of Claude Le Petit, in memory of Claude Le Petit, Jacques Chausson. My friends, they burnt poor Chausson. That rascal with his trademark curly mane, who won eternal fame by how he passed on. Nobody will die like that again. He sang his funeral dirge without a care. Beg your pardon. He sang his funeral dirge without a care for life, slipped on the sulphur stiffened shirt. And from the cold inferno of the pyre, he looked death in the eyes without a stir. As his confessor, clutching a crucifix, implored him to save his soul in vain, the scoundrel fell amid the flaming sticks and turned his backside to the heavens. In death, as in life, outrageous to the last, he gave a final airing to his arse. So, Gargoyle keeps pestering poet to recite poems at him in order to try and activate his imagination and therefore escape his carapace. And one of the poems that poet reads to him is about a panther that poet sees in the Jardin des Plantes, a little park in Paris where there's a sort of a small zoo which has a huge, large cage with a panther in it. And the German poet Rilke saw probably the great, great, grand panther of the of the one that the poet sees back in the early 1900s. So this is called Panther God. It takes a while before I see him behind the shimmer of wide glass that glances off your glance as soon as look at it. High up, lying on a step of concrete beside an indoor tree trunk, he's folded up his life, his padded paws tucked in beneath the musculature of the Sphinx, the ripple of his sandy pelt smudged with sooty blotches, sealed into a velvet of perfection. The slits of his eyes have sunk within the heavy pentangle of his head. He's in a predator's sleep and dreaming of the plains of northern China. And then, as if he's seen a thought, scrambling for cover, his eyes have switched awake. He turns his head, and in a lightning jag, we are locked in a groove of power, eye to eye, until I blink as if bolting for my life. Thank you. Just two more. This is a short one, shortish. On another occasion, poet flies in a dream to Notre Dame, and he sees in the muck and dirt on the roof some scratchings. And when he stares at the scratchings a bit more closely, it looks like writing, as if done by gargoyle's claw. So poet writes down what he sees in his notebook and considers it at a later date, and it looks like a sort of holy scripture, which poet calls the Gospel of Gargoyle. Blessed are the rooftops, for they bear the weight of gargoyles. Blessed are the gutters, for they are the rivers of gargoyles. Blessed are the poets who believe, gargoyle shall be their friend. Blessed is the moonless night, for it hides the plotted path to heaven. Blessed is the wind, for it blows chances across the way. Blessed is the chimney smoke, for it is the incense of the earth. Blessed are the dogs that roam, for they are the preachers of gargoyle. Blessed are the ugly, for they shall remain ugly. For in the world of gargoyle, there is no ugliness or beauty. All are equal under the stars. Thank you very much indeed. It's unusual to get clapped after every poem. I think it's an Ovale tradition. It's lovely. I haven't had this since about 10 years ago when I was here. So I'm going to end with a poem called Shadow. Thanks a lot for coming along this evening. It's the last poem in the book, and so it misses out a huge amount, i.e. the climax of the book, which takes place during a thunderstorm over Paris, after which both poet and gargoyle become radically and irrevocably changed. But in this last poem, poet is discovered that his dreams of flying to Notre Dame have dried up. Shadow. Weeks after my last flight, I stood by the Seine and gazed at Notre Dame beneath a pure blue sky, remembering the scaffolding that had encased it, after the Great Fire. A geometric palace of iron perpendiculars, of rods and bolted joints, all glinting in the sun. Lines of golden lines, and layers of platforms, all cosseting the dame, restoring her to life. The topmost rods appearing to support a cathedral of air. I headed back to college, and on the Rue des Bernardins, the one-legged beggar was still sitting there, the pavement running up to him like a gleaming carpet. I had my money ready, and drawing near, I plunged like a heron after a fish and dropped two coins. His leonine face lit up. His smile, his merci, merci, detained me long enough for him to reach and shake my hand. He caught me by surprise. Perhaps he'd been a veteran in some war or just unlucky. I felt within that touch, that big tobacco hand, a transference of such warmth, I found it hard to break our grip. He looked momentarily sad, perhaps deflated, that I could go off to another life beyond his reach. I don't know why, I blurted out to him, in the land of the gargoyle, the beggar is the prince, then walked uphill towards the afternoon, his blessings fading in my ears. I glanced behind me and glimpsed my shadow, light and nimble and black against the shining pavement. It seemed to have two shapes I hadn't seen before, protruding from my shoulders like long, dark wings. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Thank you.